On the field, winning comes from hard work, care, and preparation. I learned that that same hard work doesn't stop when we exit the arena. Your care is our commitment, and preparation is our promise. We tackle challenges head on and turn dreams into reality, which is why I'm excited to join the team at Alcova Mortgage, where we help you score the perfect home.
Welcome into the Who's On Podcast, part of the Saber Podcast Network, presented in part by Joe Reed and Alcova Mortgage. Score your perfect home today. It is ACC Tournament Week. Eyes are on Charlotte, North Carolina now, the Spectrum Center, home of a bunch of different memories for Virginia basketball as they get ready to play Georgia Tech on Wednesday to open up the ACC Tournament in the first round. They did get that first round bye. We'll see how long they stick it out down there in Charlotte, but to talk about a whole lot of UVA basketball stuff and a little bit of UVA athletics overall, I've got Chris Wright from thesaber.com joining me for a Saber takeover here on the Who's On Podcast. Chris, how you doing?
Doing well. Always excited for March Madness, even when Virginia doesn't look like they're going to be in that without some sort of run at the tournament, obviously.
Yeah, I usually refrain from a lot of brackets and bracket challenges and stuff when UVA is in it, just because I like to focus on kind of covering it. But this year, you know, I can kind of fully indulge in all the bracket madness and everything because Virginia is nowhere close to the NCAA tournament unless they make a big run down in Charlotte this week at the ACC tournament. But real quick, let's start off with UVA ending the regular season. It's been a long regular season, and it finally came to an end last weekend at Syracuse. 84-70 was the final, Virginia dropping the regular season finale to finish the regular season with a losing record for the first time since 2009-2010. That was Tony Bennett's first year in Charlottesville. Just as you're watching that game, I know there's been a lot of thoughts on that one. Briefly, because I know we have a lot to get into, but what'd you just kind of take away from how they close out the year?
Was not a very intense game. You know, and Virginia has been competitive throughout this year, which has turned into sort of an odd year overall, right? But this one, they just didn't feel like there was a lot of intensity to it. It's not that they weren't playing. They were trying to score. They were trying to do things, but there wasn't, I don't know, that feel of a high-level game or an important game. It didn't have that feel at all. It felt like summer league or something. And I know that Coach Sanchez said after the game that he didn't think the energy was good either. So I don't think that was just watching from afar. I think everyone was kind of like, wow, that was kind of pointless. Those teams were just kind of hanging out. So sort of a boring game in a lot of ways.
Yeah, I struggle to come up with too many takeaways other than like what you said. They were flat. Like the whole game was flat. Like it just I came as close as I have all year to just being like, all right, I'm done. I got other stuff to do. It's a, you know, Saturday night. I've got a new baby. I can go focus on that. But yeah, it was a flat energy, and maybe that benefited a guy like Eddie Lampkin who could just kind of post up down there and score like he did against UVA. But it was just kind of a meh ending to end the season and kind of any, you know, positivity that they had kind of built up over kind of the win streak and then, you know, coming back, beating Wake and, you know, a competitive game for at least half of it against Clemson and then winning the home regular season finale against Florida State. It just kind of seems like it all kind of plateaued and fell off against Syracuse. But, you know, I don't know if it was came into their thinking at all, but they locked up the number 9 seed no matter what the result of that game was. So they will face Georgia Tech on Wednesday at noon in the first round. Or the – is it the – because it's like the second – is it the second round or the first round?
Who knows what anybody calls these things anymore?
Yeah, it's – you know, there's so many teams in the ACC tournament now, but they get the bye – into the second round to play Georgia Tech in the ACC tournament. The winner of that will face, has the unenviable task of facing number 1 Duke on Thursday at noon. And Duke was very close to actually being third in this just because of tiebreakers if they had lost that game to North Carolina, but they kind of stopped them in the second half. I don't know what you feel about this. I think Georgia Tech is a 1-point favorite heading into Wednesday at noon. in this game. The last time UVA did not win an ACC tournament game was 2013. So, you know, it's been a while, but obviously this is kind of a historic season, in the bad sense of the word. Just what do you think about this matchup? Obviously, these teams played, you know, a couple of months ago for on Tony Bennett Day, and UVA came out with a pretty convincing win, but Georgia Tech was also playing pretty much with a six-man rotation that day.
Don't love the matchup. Like, even though Georgia Tech doesn't do things that often give Virginia trouble, right? They're not a big offensive rebounding team. They don't light it up from 3-point range necessarily. But lately, Virginia's been giving up tons of points in the paint. And Georgia Tech does do a lot of movement and things like that, ball screens, et cetera, that has started to cause even more trouble for Virginia to the point that we're seeing more zone. On a frequent basis, you know, 1-3-1 mixing in zones. So that part of it, I'm not super like enthused about, right? Even though it looks like a decent matchup on paper, I think Georgia Tech has the personnel to really attack in the paint if they want to. So, like Clemson, for example, who's better than Georgia Tech, obviously, even though Georgia Tech beat them in the regular season, the Clemson like basically just said, "Hey, we don't need to shoot threes. We're just going to attack the rim relentlessly, and Virginia won't stop it." So I think that approach is growing from opponents, right? And I think Georgia Tech will have seen that on their prep here. So they only had 28 points in the paint the first time against Virginia, and I just don't see that number replicating itself. I just feel like Georgia Tech's going to find a way to create more points in the paint. Can Virginia muster any sort of defense against that? And that to me is where it starts. Nathan George is obviously going to be a headache. He had 20 in the first game anyway. But if he gets downhill constantly and then other guys are getting involved, I just see the path to winning being very tricky for Virginia.
Yeah, George has been good for Georgia Tech for most of the season. Puts up a lot of assist numbers, and he's kind of dominates the ball for them. But one guy that didn't really have a good game against Virginia in that first matchup was Lance Terry, and he's basically playing, I think, what Damon Stoudamire say with one hand, and so he had 0 points on 0 for 4 shooting. So he's kind of out there for 32 minutes just because they had to put someone out there. But he was definitely not at full strength. And you see what he's done since then. He scored 15, 20, 15, 31 against Miami in their home finale. So he's kind of come back on a little bit more. He had a rough game in their regular season finale against at Wake Forest, but he's definitely a threat for them as, you know, their leading scorer on the season, averaging 15 points a game. So if he's gives them anything, that's going to make a big difference in this game. And then Bay Ndongo, you talked about the points in the paint, really good big man. Kind of had an okay game against Virginia in that matchup earlier, but obviously, kind of with the way Virginia is defending bigs right now, you worry about that. Who do you expect maybe just to kind of step up a little bit more in this ACC tournament? I know Ron Sanchez mentioned on Monday, when talking with the media, you know, he thought Jacob Kofi and Anthony Robinson were going to have to be big players for them, which is interesting just because their playing time has kind of fluctuated as of late.
You basically are splitting that position. So maybe he's doing that with his answer, right? They're kind of rotating. They both play 15 to 20 minutes. They kind of split that role. So maybe that's what he's getting at. But I don't know that, even though they both played well at Syracuse, right? Like, really, the whole front court had decent numbers at Syracuse, but the game was never in doubt for the last 30 minutes. So it's hard for me to take much from that. It'll be interesting. Like, Virginia had a good game against Georgia Tech the first time, and those two guys played well. You know, Robinson played 15 minutes, had 6 points. Kofi played 24 minutes, had 9 points. That's similar to the type of production we saw at Syracuse in the finale. So there's a little bit there with the front court. Virginia shot the ball really well the first time against Georgia Tech, shot over 50%. I just have a hard time like taking that game as a harbinger of anything. Because yes, it was Tony Bennett Day, so there's a different energy in the building. But also, Georgia Tech had just come off the triple overtime win against Clemson, playing a six-man rotation. 4 days later, they're on the road in Charlottesville. Yeah, I have a hard time like taking much from that. Like, I don't feel like that applies to the rematch as much. So I'm curious just to see, is this matchup as favorable as it kind of feels like Virginia will be competitive? I think the other, and I'm curious on your opinion, but The other part of this is which team actually cares? Which
Yes.
team actually thinks they can beat Duke the next day? Which team actually wants to try to string together some sort of possible run or some sort of possible resume for something else, right? Versus, let's just get this mess over with, get my name in the portal. And we know guys are looking, right? Like whether we know it officially or not. I mean, Dan Hurley goes on 60 Minutes and says half of his roster is already taking interviews. If he's saying that blatantly, with a two-time reigning champ, it's like, what do you think all these other teams are doing?
Yeah.
Right. So which team cares more, I think, may be the bigger story than anything.
Yeah, and based off of the game against Syracuse, you would really struggle to say, like, does Virginia care at this point in the season? Because it didn't look like it for 40 minutes against Syracuse, and kind of going in now, you look at this, the season most likely is over when they lose to Georgia Tech, and then kind of the madness begins of the coaching search and players and the transfer portal and all of that kind of kicks off in earnest as soon as this season's over. So, are players trying to get there a little bit sooner, or are they trying to extend this and play with this team a little bit longer? And yeah, that's a big question going into this, and that's why I don't put much stock in that first game either, because I think it's wildly different circumstances this second go around against Georgia Tech. And I think Georgia Tech has played well at times. They've had some really competitive games. We mentioned that triple overtime game against Clemson. Like, they have played at a good level at times this season, and they have decent players, and it's going to be really interesting. And interesting, Ron Sanchez, just depending on what happens in this game, like, he's playing Georgia Tech and Damon Stoudemire, who made a pretty impassioned stump speech for Ron Sanchez last time they were in Charlottesville. But I guess, kind of as the season winds down, do you expect Virginia to one win in this game against Georgia Tech? And do you think you thinking 1-1 or 0-1, I guess, in this ACC tournament?
You're writing off the Duke game. I love it. With good reason. Virginia cannot compete with Duke. I think it's 0-1, unfortunately. Like Georgia Tech's at a very different place than Virginia. So even though they're in that 8-9 game where it feels like they're in the same boat, I just don't think they are. Damon Stoudemire is still on the front end of things at Georgia Tech. They don't have an ACC tournament win under him. This would be something they could, like put a feather in their cap and go, okay, we are building, we are like growing, et cetera. Whereas Virginia's, it feels like just playing out their hand, right? Like it's like when you have a few chips left at a Texas Hold'em tournament, you're already out, but you're still at the table because you're not technically out. And I guess you could go all in and win four or five times in a row or something. It's just not going to happen, right? Like, so, yeah, I think 0-1. I have a hard time thinking. Even though Virginia has been competitive and played hard against this level of competition in the ACC, other than the Syracuse finale, I think they'll play hard. I just don't know that they have the defensive chops to do what needs to be done, to be honest.
And that's why I wonder, just with Ron's comments, if maybe there is more Kofi and Robinson minutes in this game, because you look on the season, they're the top two guys in defensive rating on the team. They played well, and you kind of feel a little bit better defensively. I know they make mistakes, and they miss cutters, or they miss actions and stuff like that. But just the length, having them out there and just having a presence around the rim, has kind of been better than what you've seen from the Blake Buchanan, Elijah Saunders front court that they has played a lot of minutes of as of late. But yeah, I struggle to get to the 1-1. I struggle to see, I think it's definitely a good possibility that they beat Georgia Tech. Maybe they show enough energy for one last kind of go round, and then kind of let the chips where they fall against a Duke on Thursday. But yeah, it's tough to see right now, just because with the energy, and yeah, our players ready just to kind of get this season over with. It's been a long year. It's been a really challenging and trying year for everyone involved. Are they ready to just to kind of close the door on this season and then kind of start looking towards the future after it, as I'm sure many have already been doing? Looking at the postseason, just because people keep mentioning it, I did see an NIT projection, which I've never seen NIT projections before, but someone had Virginia in as an 8 seed. And I will say that the NIT is a little bit different this year because you've got this new Fox tournament that is taking all of the Big East, the Big 12, and the Big 10 teams over there with them. So that leaves the ACC and SEC. I think there's a automatic qualifier for like the top ACC team left out of the NCAA tournament. So you have that, but there's more positions and places for ACC teams. I struggle to see Virginia wanting to accept an NIT bid slash getting one to begin with. I think the focus is going to be on let's kind of get this program rebooted and ready to go in this transfer portal.
I don't know the rule. Do you have to have a winning record now to make the NIT?
So that was my biggest question because they will not have a winning record if they even if they go 1-1 because they already have a losing record. But back in 2017, I guess there was a rule change where you don't have to be above 500 anymore or at 500 or better, which is a surprise to me because I thought that was always the rule. But I looked it up. I dug through all the NIT rules. I know more about the NIT selection process than I ever wanted to know, and I guess that's the rules. So they could qualify. I really struggle to see what is the gain from doing that.
Unless you somehow see it as a reward for these players, and I don't imagine they would view it as a reward. Maybe they would, for battling through adversity, coaching change, Ames had an injury, etc. Do they view it as a reward to play in any tournament? I don't think Virginia would host. So you're
No.
taking on a cost, like you're incurring travel cost, etc. And this is a team that's traveled all over, right? Like Dallas and the West Coast and Puerto Rico and they're Syracuse, right? They've been to the far reaches of the conference and
Yeah.
beyond. So there's a cost there in a time when cost matters, right? Like I have a hard time seeing it. So maybe they'll entertain taking it. Maybe they'll see what the coaches and players think. But at the same time, and I don't think that would prohibit the other side, the coaching search side, because it
No.
probably would be over pretty quickly. The NIT happens really fast,
Yeah.
right? Isn't it like Tuesday or something?
Well, it also
Tuesday
kind
or
of be
Wednesday's the
like
first game, and
the.
you're probably 0-1 there too. I don't know. Like, I think no.
It would probably be like the Bronco coaching the Bull, Tony Elliott coming in and kind of getting his ducks in a row behind the scenes. It'd kind of be like
Yeah,
that
that
situation.
transition in hindsight didn't go very well.
No, it did not.
So I think even from that standpoint, like you've tried that once before too. I think
Yeah.
no. I'm trying to be diplomatic, I think, to see if the players think it's a reward, but I think the ultimate answer is yeah, no.
I don't know if there'd be much interest on their end either. And you mentioned the travel aspect of it. Right now in this projected NIT bracket that came across my X feed, Boise State, Texas, UC Irvine are some of the one seeds. Like, so that's where you'd have to be traveling to. That's
Let's throw Boise onto the Dallas, California, Miami, Puerto Rico, Syracuse list. Boise gets you the middle of the country is the one thing that's missing.
Yeah,
You didn't have the trip to Notre Dame to cover that checkbox this year.
that's true. That's true. It would be brutal. So I know some fans maybe deep down kind of want just some postseason because Virginia, the last time they didn't make the postseason, I believe was 2011 in any like NIT or NCAA tournament. So it's been a while since there hasn't been any postseason basketball to talk about. Obviously, there's been two NIT trips, but I think for all intents and purposes, it's like let's get a go. Yeah, I know that work's been being done behind the scenes, but like let's go ahead and get into this offseason and kind of see where it takes us. Let's take a quick break here. And coming up, we're going to talk about the looking ahead part because that's all anyone is really talking about right now. Coaching search, the impending off season. We heard from Carla Williams for the first time in 6 months. She had not spoken or made any kind of public statements in 6 months. A lot has happened in that time. She sent a letter out to UVA donors. So we're going to talk about that plus the coaching search. That's coming up here on the Who's On podcast.
On the field, winning comes from hard work, care, and preparation. I learned that that same hard work doesn't stop when we exit the arena. Your care is our commitment, and preparation is our promise. We tackle challenges head on and turn dreams into reality, which is why I'm excited to join the team at Alcova Mortgage, where we help you score the perfect home.
Welcome back into the Who's On podcast. I'm still here with Chris Wright as we kind of take a little look ahead to this offseason that's quickly, rapidly approaching here. Men's basketball, obviously, you still got the ACC tournament. We talked about that earlier, but let's get into what's going to happen next and just kind of brace for what's happening next. Carla Williams sent out a letter to UVA donors through the Virginia Athletics Foundation. Mentioned a bunch of stuff. It was kind of mostly your boilerplate, kind of what's going on in the world of UVA athletics and college athletics as a whole. But she did have one section that I'll read real quick, just about men's basketball in general. There was some other good stuff, kind of talking about the house settlement. We could get into that too, but just about men's basketball, she said the men's basketball program is undergoing a pivotal transition following Coach Bennett's retirement. Interim head coach Ron Sanchez is leading the team through this period with tremendous grace and care for the young men and on our team. We are working diligently to bring the head coach search to conclusion prior to the end of the spring transfer portal, which is March 24th through April 22nd. So anything you would take out from that, just kind of her first comments in 6 months. You know, she has not talked to the media much during her entire tenure at UVA and really has kind of avoided the spotlight, especially these past couple of months.
I mean, I think the main thing there is it feels like it's setting the table for changes, right? Like, I think everyone's anticipating that, like Coach Sanchez, a candidate, but not the top candidate. So that feels like setting the table for, hey, house settlement, revenue sharing, money, we need money. When this new hire comes in, we're going to make a push, I assume, to donate to Cap Futures, et cetera. I feel like that's going to be attached to whatever comes in there. There was a little bit of that in there anyway with football, right? She reminded in there with there's a matching donation out there up to $3 million, if I'm off the top of my head, if that's right. Hey, keep donating to football because we want to get the full matching fund. So there's a little bit of that in there anyway, but it feels like a setting the table sort of thing. Like, here's the window that we want to get it done by, right? We are paying attention to the portal. It seemed to be like a reassuring fans / setting the table to ask for money once the new hire decision is made. Nothing overly surprising in there, right? March 24th is the weekend, the day at, you know, Monday the 24th is the day after the first weekend of the tournament. So you'll only have 16 teams left playing nationally, the transfer other than the NIT teams, et cetera. But you'll have the transfer portal opening. Most coaches that are under consideration should be done by then. You know, there may be a few candidates on the list that maybe make it into that Sweet 16 window that could delay it another week. If it's one more week, March the 31st, that's after there's only four teams left at that point. So I would think by end of March at the latest is what we're looking at here. So yeah, it was a setting the table type of letter is the way I took it.
Yeah, no, I think that's fair. And kind of the wording there, just kind of, it seems like a thanks to Ron. you had a hard season. And we're trying to get this coaching search done so we can kind of move on and get into the future of it.
I think everyone like everyone respects and likes Coach Sanchez.
Yeah.
So there's some delicacy that's trying to be handled here from people inside the department that think highly of Coach Bennett, of Coach Sanchez, of the whole staff. Yeah, you're trying to handle that as best you can.
Yeah, absolutely. And kind of looking at this timeline here, it's interesting because of recent coaching hires, especially inside the ACC, but this time frame is so different in coaching and college basketball hires now because of the transfer portal. We've already seen it kind of taking place for years, honestly, with college football. You know, the hires keep getting faster and faster and faster and earlier and earlier and earlier because people want to get a head start on what's going on with the transfer portal. And if you kind of miss out on the transfer portal, then it's going to have a big detriment on what your season's going to look like the following year. So I wouldn't be surprised, like you said, probably the candidates that they would be looking at will be coaching in the NCAA tournament. And so I would expect Virginia to have someone kind of ready to go after that first weekend. Is that fair to say?
I'm assuming so, right? Just based on how these timetables seem to need to happen. You know, the Miami one and the FSU one, a little different animal, but you know, I just feel like in general, that's kind of how things go now. Like things go really fast, in part because of the portal. It's a really wide window there, and you know, and I know it feels really urgent to fans that it needs to be on March the 24th to take full advantage of the portal, but you're also going to have players that are entering throughout there. So as their seasons conclude, and let's not pretend that the agent part doesn't exist. All of these players have agents, and agents can talk to whoever they want to, whenever they want to, whether you're in the portal or not, right? So you can talk to collectives and all of that to sort of prepare players for where they're looking at potentially. So I don't know that it matters that much to have it on March 24th on the dot, but I do think it's important to have it, you know, as quickly as possible. I don't, April 22nd would be ridiculous,
Yeah.
right? They're not taking the whole window. Like, and I don't think anyone thinks they are. I just don't think March 24th has to be on the dot. Obviously, you would prefer that you get it all set up where Monday the 24th you announce it, or Tuesday morning the 25th you announce it, so that you can start the portal work while you're also doing the introductory press conference and doing all that other mess. So,
Yeah.
The coaches all say how whirlwind like the portal type stuff is. As a coach coming into a new place, it's going to be insanity, I'm sure.
Yeah, it's going to be a wild kind of changing of the guard and kind of fast process, but I mean, for all intents and purposes, you know, Virginia's kind of been doing their work, and we'll talk about that in a second. But I did want to talk about, we saw a couple other coaching situations in the ACC. Miami and Florida State both hired their next head coaches, and they're different but similar hires, because Miami's hiring Jay Lucas, like an assistant coach for Duke, who's been pretty successful in the recruiting front, really well loved in that locker room, and they hire him very early. And so he left Duke after their regular season finale against UNC, which is the first time I think I've ever seen that, a coach leaving a team before their season's over, because he's going to take another head coaching job, especially a team like Duke that has, you know, every national championship, you know, aspiration. And then Florida State hiring Sacramento Kings assistant Luke Locks, who's an alum, played there under Leonard Hamilton. He's coming in. So there's already been a few hires, and a lot of it is assistant coaches coming in and taking these jobs, which is way more flexible than trying to hire a head coach, which is what Virginia is trying to do. They're trying to hire someone that's been successful already running a program. Miami and Florida State kind of taking chances on some up and coming guys. Do you think this is going to be a trend? Do you think we could see head coaches maybe start to leave early before the NCAA tournament?
I hope not. It's like I've kind of learned in this environment that college sports are in that I guess anything could start happening. I do think it's different when it's an assistant. I remain a little surprised about Coach Lucas leaving, right? Like the opportunity to win the whole thing doesn't come around all the time for everybody. So when you're on a staff where your team has a legitimate chance, I'm just surprised. I would think you could do both jobs at once. Maybe one school or both schools don't want that, and that you had to acquiesce to go get your head coaching job that you, I'm sure, have wanted and dreamed of. It's just hard for me to think. Like, not a whole lot of teams win the thing. You know what I mean? So that one,
And
I don't know.
maybe
But
that.
they both seem to be betting on lower cost, high recruiting upside type of hires. That's what they both have gone for. Virginia, with the way things are typically successful here, it's not that. It's not we're going to win the recruiting wars. It's we're going to win the long-term development, the keep people happy, recruit your own locker room, is the way Coach Elliott always puts it. Retain guys, you know, that sort of vibe, not go make the recruiting splashes. So it's different. It's a different animal, I think. And I think that's why Virginia is looking for head coaches, hopefully, that have established something and proven they can win elsewhere, whatever level that may be. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see, but I do think it's two totally different approaches between those two schools in Virginia.
It's nice in one regards because Virginia's not dealing with the same coaching pool that Miami and Florida State were, even in the same conference. NC State just fired Kevin Keats just a year after they went to the Final Four, and now they missed the ACC tournament completely, and Kevin Keats is out of a job there, which is kind of it's just it's that's what happened. They
That's
were
the more interesting one to me. You
they're
know
an
what I mean?
Isaac
Like,
McNealy free throw last year from Keats losing his job last season. But yeah, now they're
yeah.
kind of a more similar coaching pool, you would think, to Virginia.
Well, like a similar, they have to thread the needle between the two, right? They do need to try to win some recruiting whatevers, but they also need to retain guys over the long term. They're not going to beat Duke and North Carolina at their own game. And I know Wolfpack fans are probably howling, haha, howling at that right now. But I feel like they're kind of that in-between spot. They would seem to have maybe similar candidates to Virginia, or at least in the case of Ryan Odom, because he knows Boo Corrigan, right? So, we'll see. But that one is the more interesting one to me, because where do they go? And there was a veiled sort of reference from Coach Keats when he posted on social media when the program is supported at the level, which seems to indicate, like, hey, like, Wolfpack fans, if you want more better basketball, we need more better support. And we, meaning the program, not him, he's gone, right? And he still made sure to say that. So it'll be interesting to see what they do with that as well, because it feels like what you hear the murmurs out of Virginia is that, and the Norlander article recently indicating as much as $7 million, like, Virginia is financially trying to back it.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the interesting thing, because I think the name that kind of came up immediately for NC State was Will Wade, from McNeese State, obviously been at VCU, been at LSU, had a little bit of a checkered history, but he was a guy I really liked for Miami as well. I thought just kind of his background as a guy that recruits and obviously has no problem, in the NIL world and kind of the money involved with that. And so that's a guy NC State is reportedly interested in, but do they have the financial backing to interest a guy like that who's got options? I mean, I know some schools kind of stick away from him, but it's kind of weird because, I mean, at this point, like, it's all out in the open now. So, like, what are you punishing Will Wade for? But he's a guy I think would do really well in the ACC, and interested to see if he does end up getting a job this year. But let's go into UVA's coaching search now, because nothing's really developed. And I told someone who was asking my opinion of candidates earlier in the week, I was like, who do you like? And I'm like, it's been the same guys, it feels like, since October when Tony Bennett retired. And we're just regurgitating the same points and, going off of every win and loss that they have. There's a couple new names and kind of guys that have kind of come into focus. I think you can look at Brian Odom, Richard Pitino, Shaka Smart, and a few others. I guess Richie from Furman and Medved from Colorado State, and Mark Byington from Vanderbilt has also been mentioned. But kind of what are you making kind of where this search is at this point, some of the guys that you've heard, and just kind of where we are.
Yes, the same names have been coming up throughout this whole thing, either because of state ties, Virginia ties, right, in the case of Byington, or whatever, like the recognizable names, Patino and Smart or whatever. But I think one caveat here that maybe helps frame this a little bit is Jeff Goodman had from Field of 68 had a tweet or an X or whatever those things are called this week that some of the bigger coaching names aren't looking to make moves this particular offseason. So the candidates that you're hearing a lot are these type of guys, like not just for Virginia, it's across the board. These are the most popular, the best of the kind of up and coming class still, because these guys are mostly still young, right? This is an interesting time in college basketball where you have a lot of guys trying to become the next legends. right? And do they make moves and have they been successful elsewhere? Have they done Power Five before? Can they win a national title where they're at? Versus, you know, like the really big names, right? Like we've had in some recent coaching search years where you have guys move big to big or something like that. This feels a little different. Goodman says those guys are not really on the table for anybody, not just Virginia.
Yeah.
They're just not looking to move. So this is sort of the most proven names, right? You got McCollum is maybe the most popular name on the message board of guys who are not super proven, first year in Division One, winning a lot of games with Drake. But otherwise, these are the names everyone's like, go on any message board of any team that's looking for a coach still. So take Miami and FSU out of that. But NC State, some of these names are coming up. Patino, Odom's on their list too, in terms of fan list. So yeah, I think this is pretty normal. To me, the thing I keep coming back to is, because Virginia fans ask this a lot, is where does Virginia fall in the pecking order? How is the job viewed? That's part one. The part I always circle though is, do these coaches feel like they can win the whole thing where they are? Whichever coach you want to bring up, whether that's Byington at Vanderbilt, Smart at Marquette, Patino at New Mexico, do they think they can win the whole thing there? And I think the answer for most of those guys is no. Right? So Virginia has proven it can get to the top of the mountain. So whether it's top 25 job or top 50 job or whatever, there aren't a whole lot of schools that can say they've won the title, period. There just aren't that many, period, but certainly not that many in recent history. So, is that enough? Plus the money, not just the coaching money. Virginia will pay market rate for the coach, but also the NIL, the house settlement money. Virginia will fully fund the basketball side. So when you weave all of that together, does that make any of these guys want to jump? And I think that's ultimately what we're boiling everything down to. You know what I mean? So we'll see. Like I don't really have a problem with any of the names on the list. I think the popular fan list or the behind the scenes list or whatever. I think all of them make sense. There's a little bit of rolling the dice with any of them, right? I think that's true. Like, yeah, we'll see. I don't know that there's a Tony Bennett out there necessarily, but maybe there is a guy who's won a little bit, but hadn't really done the level that he did when he got to Virginia, right? He was good at Washington State, don't get me wrong. And to do it at Washington State, like, says what it says in and of itself. But his resume wasn't overly stacked when he came to Virginia because he hadn't been a head coach that long. So it'll be interesting to see where this goes, what fan reaction is, what donor reaction is. All of it's going to be interesting.
I'm sure you remember, but I keep going back to a couple posts that I've seen from way back when Tony Bennett was hired on the Saber message board, and it wasn't an immediately positive reaction from everyone. So you got to let these things kind of play out, and anyone can pick the flavor of the month, but
There's
I
even a
am.
one fan even said it may even just depend on which flavor you want. You said flavor of the month. Like all of these guys could be flavor of the month, but do you like vanilla or strawberry or chocolate or butter pecan or whatever, right? Like they all have upside. They've all proven they can win at the place they're at. So Virginia is not taking a complete risk, no matter who they choose. So it may come down to that. Just which flavor do you like?
It does seem like you can pros and cons list this till the cows come home, but at the end of the day, any coach you hire is going to have their pros and their cons, and some fans are going to like some guys more, and just because, like you said, it's what style do you like? Do you want a complete revamp of what Virginia basketball is like? Do you want to go up tempo like Richard Pitino? Do you want to, have some solid defensive principles still, or kind of what do you want Virginia the basketball to look like? And I mean, that's kind of what's going into all this and what's going to work best for Virginia in the future. And I mean, it's really interesting. Just kind of looking at some of the candidates, is there one that stands out to you, or are you just kind of like, just hire someone and we'll go from there?
I mean, you can draw positives, like you said, pro con list for a lot of these guys. I think of the guys on the list, there are different reasons that you might like them, right? Odom, I know UMBC bothers people that they'd have to hear it the whole time, but he's won at multiple places and it's the storybook thing, right? Ball boy at Virginia to becomes head coach at Virginia, climbs the ladder, dad got passed over for the job, whether inadvertently or just timing or whatever. Yeah, there's a storybook vibe there. Patino obviously has the legacy, the famous coaching dad, the second chance, didn't do as well at Minnesota, but has done well at his second stop. Does his second chance, right? How does that play out? Shaka Smart, energy, the energy that he would bring. Like, and I don't mean havoc and all of that. Like, he got famous for havoc at VCU. I just mean the way he coaches. The dude is full of energy. He's on the sidelines, he's going after it. He doesn't do it all through the portal, which it seems like Virginia fans would prefer, right? Like, if they had their druthers, like, even in this climate, they would like someone who retains people. Shaka Smart certainly fits that, right? Or do you look at somebody else, like a Medvev, that sort of continues the Bennett tree without officially continuing the Bennett vibe, right? So there's a lot of, and you go down the list. I mean, pick a name, draw it out of the hat. I can give you a reason why it might make sense. So I don't really have a favorite in my mind. Like, I'm a basketball guy, right? I just love basketball. So I'm going to find it interesting regardless, right? To see what the different style is, how they go about it, what their bread and butter plays are. All of that's going to be interesting to me, regardless of which name it ends up being.
And just to kind of update where they are with this coaching search, obviously Matt Norlander put out last week about the search firm reaching out to multiple candidates, having meetings, talking to some. That report mentioned Ryan Odom and Richard Pitino. There have been other meetings happening. There's been rumors and sources flying around, of course, as always with this kind of stuff. Flight tracking is already beginning in earnest. Haven't been to a flight tracking website in a long time, but it seems like, they're kind of well into the mix of this. When do you expect? I mean, we talked about it with the timeline. Is there kind of a time when you would like to see kind of this search kind of come to its conclusion?
I think Thursday of next week, the opening of the tournament, would be the best PR time. I don't know if that's feasible, particularly depending on who it ends up being, right? Like, who it ends up being is about to tip off on CBS. You don't want, or TNT or whatever. You don't want those guys talking about that guy right when he's about to coach. But that would
11:50,
be
and
the
they
best
get the
PR
12
time in
o'clock
terms
tip
of
off.
most eyeballs on your program. Thursday, the NCAA tournament. Even more so than Friday, the NCAA tournament. It's like a national holiday to a lot of people. So that would be the biggest splash time to announce it would be then. I don't think that's feasible, by the way. I kind of expect it to be the 24th or 25th, right after the first weekend. And then, if it's a candidate who's still playing, maybe that gets delayed, but we'll see.
I expect they will have some sort of deal worked out, whether it's, probably early next week, and then, like you said, probably announced right after that first two rounds of the NCAA tournament, just because it's going to be hard to get someone before that, especially when you're looking at candidates who are going to have their teams in the March Madness field and teams
Unless
historically.
there's a hire that none of us are thinking about
And
based on what's out there.
totally possible, totally possible that that could happen too. Just going off of the reports and the intel and kind of what people have been saying and the rumors flying around at this point. But it's setting up for an interesting couple weeks. I'm sure we'll have a lot coming up on the Sabre.com covering all that. But Chris, thanks for coming on and talking through a wide array of Virginia basketball.
Yeah, and like we'll see if we're right or wrong about oh and done, right? Like, in the ACC tournament or not. Like, it wouldn't bother me if Virginia wins a few games in the tournament. Like, it's never bad for Virginia to win. I don't think it changes the big picture regardless.
They're not gonna speed up a coaching search or do anything based off of one win in the ACC tournament or getting out bumped out early. So the things are gonna keep, as Ron Sanchez says, he's not worried about what's going on across the street. Across the street is gonna keep working no matter kind of what happens with these results in the ACC tournament.
I'm going to say the preferred walk-ons podcast is down there. They're at the ACC tournament. So
Absolutely. Give them a
go follow those
follow.
and listen to it on social media. They're going to do some stuff down there.
Love those guys. Love going on their show. It'll be a good time down in Charlotte this week, no matter if you're rooting for Virginia or if you're rooting for another team. We'll see what happens this week in Charlotte. But that's gonna do it for the Who's On podcast. We will be back later in the week. We are going to try, I'll tease this now because I've already talked to him in person. We're going to try to have David Teal on, who is down at the ACC tournament this week, as soon as Virginia gets bounced from the ACC tournament. So that could be, after Wednesday, or it could be Thursday, Friday, whenever Virginia is out of the ACC tournament. We're going to have David Teal on the podcast to kind of talk about, okay, what's next for Virginia? And that's going to be coming up later in the week here on the Who's On podcast. But until then, we'll see you later.
On the field, winning comes from hard work, care, and preparation. I learned that that same hard work doesn't stop when we exit the arena. Your care is our commitment and preparation is our promise. We tackle challenges head on and turn dreams into reality, which is why I'm excited to join the team at Alcova Mortgage, where we help you score the perfect home.